Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, psychologist and researcher. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real-life experiences. This season, we are exploring goals with podcast listeners like you. We'll meet them at a place where they are formulating their goals or resolutions for 2026. Let's meet Rebecca Slater. Rebecca is a public relations consultant and founder of Beck & Call PR. She helps small to medium enterprises and charities tell their stories and raise their profiles. She's got over 25 years in the industry, and she's seen and handled just about everything that PR can throw at you, and still loves the buzz of a great campaign and seeing her clients make headlines. But when she's not crafting copy or juggling client calls, you'll find Rebecca reading, working out, eating out and socialising. She's often told that she collects people and she's quite happy with that reputation. In her words, her mind is always whirring and there's usually another idea or story just around the corner. And that's where we're going to meet Rebecca today, talking about a story.
So my goal for 2026 is a really long Travolta book. It's just something I've always wanted to do. So I figured by doing this, it might give me the push to actually get on and do it, because I've got loads of ideas.
When did you first think, I'd love to write a book?
Probably forever, probably since I was a kid. I love books. Like, I've always read loads since I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid, I'd walk down the road reading and think, like, you know, just would have books with me all the time. I've always wanted to write fiction rather than a book about work or something that I do day to day. And I've just got notebooks full of ideas. I've got quite a creative and active brain. I've got a pretty strong idea of a children's book. I've even in my head got three or four of the same character, three or four stories for different books for the same character. But I just never get round to pushing myself to actually do it.
This is a brilliant way to put that intention out there. I'm writing a book in 2026, a children's book, to be more specific. What things have to be in place for you to be able to get started with this?
Time, confidence, because I don't want to self-publish, so that's quite a big factor. So I think the research, and I think I'm quite self-aware, so I'm aware that I am a huge procrastinator if I feel that I might fail at something. So I don't procrastinate generally, but if subconsciously I think, oh, maybe this won't work, maybe it won't be successful, I tend to find ways of putting off. And I think that's what's happening with the book idea, that I'm what if no one wants it? What if I can't do it? So I keep putting it off. So I'd say time, confidence, research. But again, that's a form that shows that I'm procrastinating, because I've done PR for three or four people who've published books and they've had publishers. So I know that I can, not that I can use their publishers, but I can gather the information on where to start. I know that I've got in my contacts people who've actually published books, so I could really have said, oh, I don't worry so much about the writing side. I write every day, and it is a different type of writing.
So talk to me about the time, because that was the first thing that you said. Break that down. What does time look like? Are we talking weeks, months, years, 10 minutes?
I just need, probably months, I would guess. That's a guess, to write a book and to do the research. I don't know. I would guess months, maybe to a year. I don't know. I guess that's where the research comes in knowing timelines and how it works with, do you go to the publisher with an idea and then write, or do I have to write and then, I need to understand all that side. So I need time for that. I reckon if I just had a few hours a week, even if just little chunks. But I think, normally I have a Sunday to myself. Not at the moment, but normally I do have a Sunday where I'm home alone, And so I know I have got the time.
So finding time is not the challenge,
sitting,
I'm hearing.
It's the sitting and using that time. Because I think often what happens by the time we get to that Sunday where the day is my own, I've learned working, running around, doing dinners, making packed lunches, all the normal stuff that people do. And then I feel like maybe a little bit of me then when that Sunday times comes is like, oh, this is my time. And maybe I need to change my mindset and be like, well, this is my time. And in my time, I'm going to start doing some work on this book. Whereas currently my mindset is always like, this is my time. I'm going to sit and read a book. Or I'm going to watch that series that I haven't watched this week. So I think it's like shifting mindset in changing what I do with my free time rather than not having the time.
I'm going to replay this to you because I think that's really curious what you've just said. What you've described there is setting out a portion of your week to work on a goal, but having this fight internally with the fact that that time is your downtime, is your leisure time, is your time for you. And I might ask you, how might you, rather than try and reframe yourself to, I must work when I'm in my rest period, how might you then think about how that would be achieved on other days? How might you do some of this goal on other days and keep you and protect your rest time, your leisure time?
And I suppose I could do evenings, but in reality, by evenings, I'm just, well, a little boy still likes me to sit with him when he goes to bed and all that palaver. So by evening, I'm normally quite depleted and ready for bed myself.
Talk to me about your notebooks, because you said I've got notebooks full of ideas. When is that happening? When are you putting those notes in?
Well, I carry my notebook with me all the time. So I guess because it is just normally like, I don't know, I write it on the go sort of thing. So we've always got, because the notebook is more about when I carry the notebook in case an idea comes. If you see what I mean, I'd never have the notebook thinking, oh, I'll use this and start formulating the idea. Well, that could be an idea that sometimes when I have, if I'm on a train or something, maybe use that time to grow the ideas because I do have the book with me. But yeah, so normally the notebook is just something that I always carry and it's for any ideas. So it might be related to my other work. Like I might see something and think, oh, that'd work for so and so. There's no growth on any of the books. They're all just like a story about, I don't know, wouldn't say I had an idea for a story about what if you ran away and every day for 30 days you pretended to be someone else.
I would totally read that.
So like when these mad things just come into my head. Just write down story about being a different person every day for 30 days and what things you would discover. You know, I hadn't really developed the idea. But then for one day, they're in one place and they might, if they meet people, they might say, oh, I'm an actress, blah, blah, I'm here to do a play. And then another day, they might be in another place and they might say, oh, I'm a baker. And then looking at how people interact differently with people when they think different things about them and whether that would help someone find themselves if they tried on lots of different versions of themselves or different things they wanted to be. So this is how my brain works.
Psychologically, it's such an interesting concept.
But it feels massive. That whereas the children's book feels more doable at this moment.
Why is that?
I think because of the children's book, like it's more simple in my brain. The idea of the story is more simple. I can visualise the images and things that I want. So yeah, I think the children's book feels more manageable in my mind as a starting point. Whereas that other book, I feel like I would start and totally lose momentum, that I'd be like, oh, this is exciting, because this is how my brain works. This is exciting, shiny, shiny magpie. And then I'd do about 3 days of stories about this person, and then I'd be like, oh, I don't care now.
But this is a really interesting observation, isn't it? I think many people will resonate with this idea of having goals and then trying to balance a massive, huge, big goal versus, you know, bringing that into something that is, and I'm going to use the word realistic, which we're always told to make a SMART goal, aren't we? You know, make it specific, make it measurable, make it achievable, make it realistic. Personally, if that works for you, great. I always find that that makes me just switch off and go, well, that sounds boring now. I don't want to do it. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that the bigger we go with goals, the more stretching we go with it, the more fulfilling.
There's a thing called Writers HQ. It's because you asked me about how could I use that time to... And then when we've been talking about the bigger book idea, and I was saying, oh, it's too much. And a couple of times I went to a thing in Birmingham called Writers HQ, and that would be a good way of maybe getting into writing the book. It's the full day, and there's a group of you, normally about 8 or 10, and you just write in sprints, and you don't have to share what you've written or anything with anyone. I enjoy it, but it also, I'm in a place where it's sort of out of my control. If you know what I mean, like I can't get up and be like, oh, I'm going to just distract myself by putting the washing on, or, oh, why don't I just listen to this podcast, or why don't I just put that on the television, because I've paid to be in a place to do a specific task. So it took me a while to get there, but maybe that's a way I could get started.
I love that you're identifying the types of resources and support that can scaffold your goal now. So we've gone from, I need to find time, I need to do research, and it was all very much, I need to do all of this on my own. And now what I'm hearing is, how can I use community? How can I use resource? Reflecting on the timing, and psychologically, a challenge to consider is Sunday being, you know, conceptually at the end of the week, and what happens when Sunday gets overtaken? How will that make you feel on Monday, knowing that the Sunday passed? And perhaps how do you build something in on other days of the week as of practice? And that sounds like you already have a bit of the answer with, you take a notebook away with you. What I would reflect on with you there is working between this all or nothing space when it comes to procrastination, because the procrastination puts us in all or nothing thinking. Yeah. It's like, I have to have brilliant circumstances to be able to get started and to complete what I need to do. Whereas if we come out of that procrastination space, it's saying, well, it might not be ideal time, but actually I've got 10 minutes. I'll do this, or I'll do that.
So look, I exercise every day. And I do it first thing in the morning, but because it's a big thing for me, like it's something I want to do, nothing gets in the way of it. So maybe I need to start thinking of it like that. So every morning between 6:30 or 7 o'clock, I get up and I go outside. We've got a little room with some exercise equipment in, and I do it without fail. And then I found that, I was rushing, so I adapted my program. So I found on my Peloton a 20-minute express weights program. So every day now, for the past 7 weeks, I've just done 20 minutes of weights every day and 10 minutes of cardio, and then longer workouts at the weekend, which seems I'm going all around the house. But my point is, I've made that priority. So I adapted it. So maybe that's what I need, the writing, because the exercise was important to me. When I couldn't fit the hour in, I didn't just go, oh, well, I haven't got an hour, I'm not going to bother doing it. I was like, well, what can I do?
That flexibility of thinking is going to be absolutely key for you achieving this goal. So there's an experiment that happened. Katie Milkman, the psychologist, worked with employees at Google, And she set them some activities to do around exercise, but she incentivized them. So she said, if you go to the gym every day, you'll get this amount of money. And so guess what? People went to the gym. And the group was split into two. So some were told you need to get the same time every single day. And then the second group were told you need to go every day. They weren't told what time of day they needed to go. And both groups were incentivized. And at the end of that incentivization, both groups went really consistently because they were being paid to. But when the incentivization got taken away, it was the group that weren't going at the same time every day that were more consistent because they had already learned to be more flexible. So if something came along and took them off their schedule, they were used to being flexible in moving around it. So we know what you're saying there is, I've dealt with that this year. I've already been flexible. So you've got that mental flexibility and strength. And another thing I just wanted to ask, I use Peloton as well, is how much do you look at the app itself? Because my app tells me if I've got a streak going. So if I've managed to like run.
I'm obsessed with the streaks. I'm obsessed. On my private Instagram, I swear I must bore people to death, right? Because I use the app. So like I'm always posting on Instagram. I'm 135 weeks streak. Or the other day, I'd reached 800 strength workouts. So everybody on my private Instagram, even though they don't care, has to know that I'm doing 800 strength workouts and because I'm in the annual challenge. So every time I reach 1,000 minutes, I'm like, this year so far, I've done 9,000 minutes. So yeah, that sort of thing does motivate me because...
So how do we replicate some of that accountability and that demonstration of your...
I think for me, it's getting into the pattern of writing because like with exercise, I've exercised actively chosen, like made a conscious decision to exercise probably for about 20 odd years.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's making it the habit. So maybe like starting with doing like 10 minutes three times a week until it becomes like such a habit that then, because I suppose that's probably how it started with gym stuff. When we went into lockdown and I couldn't go, I recognised that, oh, I don't actually need the gym because I'm still doing all the stuff without a gym. That shows how it becomes such a part of my everyday that then we were like, oh, I don't need to pay a gym membership because I can motivate myself to do that. So I guess it's like building it up. Maybe until it becomes a bit like exercise, till it becomes like, oh, I don't really need motivating to do this. I just do it because now it's a thing that I do. So maybe if I started with a little bit.
It's been really useful to explore that idea of time and habit.
Some days, like yesterday, I'd sort of finished my work. I'd sort of lost momentum by about 4 o'clock. But maybe I could have used that time, like, because I didn't really do anything in that time, even to just look at what notes I've made and see how I could expand on them or Google publishers or email one of my contacts saying, what is the process?
You've got to start taking action on things. It's working out. How does that action, what's the action look like? How can you be flexible with the action? And you've bottomed that out a little bit. You know, ideally, you will use Sundays to do writing on the book that you are going to do, but you're also recognize that there's some flexibility possibly needed in the way in which you build that habit into your week that I think is quite linked into this idea of taking action on asking somebody about what the steps are and the overall timeline is how you are measuring success with this as well. So that was the second thing you mentioned. You mentioned, you know, time, procrastination and success. So what does success look like for you? And I want to ask you about what success would look like for writing that adult book, because that was the one that you've perceived to be bigger.
Success would be getting somebody who wanted to publish. Actually writing it would be a success as well. But getting somebody, I think I'd feel more success in getting someone who wanted to publish it as opposed to the amount of people who would buy it. which maybe sounds a bit backward. I think for me, it would be the validation that somebody else went, oh, yes, that's a good idea. And the bigger book, I don't know, when I just think, even think about the bigger book already, I automatically start cutting it down. So that tells me that that feels quite scary.
I wonder if one of the goal actions is to have a conversation about the big scary thing with somebody.
Yeah.
Who knows their stuff.
Yes. Yes. So to speak to somebody about the big book.
You talked about validation being important.
A well-recognised author. I think she's written probably about 30 books. She's written loads of books and they're all like adult books, you know, thousands and thousands of words. So she obviously knows what she's doing.
Answering that success question feels interesting at the moment, because perhaps the success is about the first thing we've talked about, which is getting into the habit and becoming that writer. It's more about identity and, you know, all of those wonderful psychological things. Perhaps firming up the outcome, that's something that will happen as part of your goal journey for 2026.
Yeah, because I could say that I'd maybe change my mind and hopefully, well, you never know, I might be like, oh, I'm going to write the big book instead. And I think it's interesting how, like, the big book really, the idea excites me, but how I automatically, like, stop myself and like, oh, I'll start with the children's book because that seems more achievable. But equally, I'm aware, with my PR head on, that it's very hard to transition from writing a children's book to then being like, oh, actually, now I'll write this. So maybe as time goes on, I'll settle on what I want to write.
Are there costs to you? And I don't just mean financially, but what are the costs to you in embarking on this goal and this resolution for 2026?
It's going to take time away from other things, especially maybe that's another thing in my brain that subconsciously is putting me off the big book, that the smaller book I feel like, oh, that won't take me as long, I could do that in chunks quite easily, whereas the big book I feel like, in my head, I feel like it would take over everything. You know, like when you get into a flow, knowing how my mind works, end up being like lots of late nights and not having very good sleep because my brain's going, oh, what about this? What about this? So, yeah, I think time would be a big cost.
What is, when your head's kind of moving at a million miles an hour, what's your current strategy for coping?
To have a notebook. That is my life. That's how I live my life, with various notebooks. No, so before I go to bed, most days, I'm a terrible doom scroller. I'm aware of that. But before I go to bed, I have like a journal where every week I plan my week. And then at the end of the week, you review your week. But each day I have to like go in and mark if I've done, I set myself goals, so it might be 10,000 steps, 2 litres of water, do some exercise, practice my singing, so I have singing lessons, and I have to fill in whether I've achieved the things that I, so I do that before bed, and then I have a 5-year journal that asks me a question every day, so I do that, and then I just tend to have my notebook, and I tend to like listen to a Peloton meditation or something, a sleep meditation. So, because sometimes I struggle to turn my brain off, especially if I've got lots of ideas or if I'm worried. So I find that doing a meditation or something tends to send me to sleep. And occasionally my sleep will be disturbed. I tend to not struggle so much getting to sleep. If I'm having sleep problems, it would be staying asleep. Probably, you know, that like 3 o'clock, oh, I need a wee. And then suddenly my brain's fully awake, even though I've kept the light off and tried to creep about in the dark so as not to wake myself fully up. And then
that's a really good strategy and coping strategy that you've got there. So having that in your back pocket is perfect, because then if you come across the same challenge around not being able to switch off, you know what works for you.
Yeah.
I think what is starting to unfold for me is just this perception of somebody who is highly organized or puts lots of structure. You like to scaffold what you do, and I would call it scaffolding, with journals and questions and prompts. And I think, you know, taking that and how you like to work around other areas of your life, building some of that into this goal. So let me ask you, are you calling this a goal or are you calling it a resolution?
A goal. I don't really like resolutions.
This goal that you've got needs to be scaffolded for success, because that works for you or has worked well for you in the past. And also, when you scaffold, you build in good habits and you build in coping habits as well. To summarize where we've got to, your goal is to write a book. You really want to write a book for adults, and you've got a really good idea. You want to write a book for the validation initially, to be told, yes, this is good enough to be published. And you are concerned about procrastination, getting started, finding time, but know that you find time to do things that you want to do when you put the scaffolding around it. So there's some really good signs here that you're going to be successful with this goal that you've got next year. The other thing that we talked about was really the resources that you've got in place. So you have access to people, community, who have been through the steps to publish a book multiple times, and you can ask questions. And so you've got a lot of unknowns around your goal journey for next year. So the goal is twofold. One, to get into habit of being the writer that you want to be, doing the writing you want to do. And the second part of that is to understand the process, what that means and what it entails, and then to break that down into something that's manageable for you.
Yes, that makes sense.
I think it's a fascinating goal. So the first thing that we would normally ask then around goals is, what is your first action and when are you going to achieve it by? You can either start on January the 1st you can start today.
I'd rather start today. I'm not really a January the 1st. Like, I feel like you can start something any day.
Yeah.
Maybe I could just start taking 10 minutes to write, or sometimes, and I can add it to my little journal thing that I fill in on a note, then I'll track it. You see, them little steps I have every day, they're the things that are important to me.
Action one is to start and to mark down your progress.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you now about your resources. So you mentioned reaching out to somebody. Is that an action that you could take between now and perhaps December? Would be your second. And then I'm going to give you an action as well. So my action is explore the kinds of apps that you can get for your phone around book writing, because I wonder if there is something that is similar to a Peloton for writing a book, or something that fits more in with your journaling. You have described to me how scaffolding works for you.
Okay.
And so there's three things. I'm going to send you an email in 4 weeks' time. I'm going to say, how are you finding those three things? And I'll include that in a podcast episode. In January, we're going to come together with a couple of other guests and we'll talk about where you're at. So depending on whether my guests have started straight away or in January will depend on which episode you'll fall into, I think.
Okay, yeah. I'll bet everyone else chooses January now.
It will be interesting, won't it? I think, isn't it interesting with the choices that we make and why we make them?
Just seems like another form of procrastination. So that's why I always like, no, I'll do it now. And then hopefully by January it'll be a habit. And that was my logic behind that.
I am very much looking forward to seeing how you scaffold this goal, how that habit formation works, to hearing what insights you find and the research that you uncover about what your goal journey is going to look like in 2026, because I think this one's very much a journey of discovery, and very interested to hear how that goes for you.
Ah, thank you.
Are you ready to meet our next guest?
I want to grow Ace of Place into something bigger than just me. It is all about celebrating places. I think I can remember being somewhat perplexed by conversations people would have when I was younger about people putting down roots and this idea that you would be rooted to a place, because I never was. I was always, every 2 or 3 years we would move. And I get it now as a 40-something year old bloke with I've got an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old. We bought this house before either of them were born. You know, our whole lives are kind of baked in and around this sort of, well, it's like a 10-mile radius of our house, really. And yeah, it's taken all that time to kind of understand that, I suppose.
In next week's episode, you will get to hear from Darren Scotland, who is the illustrator and designer behind Ace of Place. I cannot wait for you to hear his goals and everything that he's been up to in 2025. It's definitely set the tone for his ambition for 2026. Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. And a favour, I've set my own goal to double the number of folk who listen to this podcast each week. Here's your invitation to share this episode with 2 friends or contacts with the question, what's your goal for 2026?